Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. Krishna pulled a fast one on me, and somehow or other I didn't bring my notes. I don't know where they are. Oh, okay. So you're reading from first canto, The Passing Way of Vishnudeva. Actually, this is the first reading that I ever heard of the Bhagavatam. In 1970, when I came into the temple, they only had Prabhupada's original books with a hard brick-covered back, and they were reading from this chapter, and I was like, wow, this is pretty exciting. Especially this part of Bhishmadeva, how he got his so many of his desires fulfilled. So, do we repeat the sentence? Svanigamam apayamat patignam. Ritam adhikartum avapluto rastaha. Dritta rata charanobhya yash chaladhu. Harir iva hantum ibham kato tariya. Swanigamam. Own truthfulness. Apaya. For nullifying. Mat pritigyam. My own promise. Ritam. Factual. Adhi. More. Cartoon. For doing it. Avaputaha. Getting down. Ratastaha. From the chariot. Rita, taking up, taking up. Ratha, Ratha. Chariot, Charanaha, wheel, Abhyayat, went hurriedly, Chaladugu. Trampling the earth. Hari. Lion. Iva. Like. Hantum. To kill. Ibham. Elephants. Gata. Leaving aside. Uttariyaha. Covering cloth. Translation report. That's what it's called. Fulfilling my desire and sacrificing his own promise, he got down from the chariot, took up its wheel, and ran towards me hurriedly, just as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He even dropped his outer garment on the way. Report. The Battle of Kurukshetra was fought on military principles, but at the same time in a sporting spirit, like a friend's fight with another friend. Duryodhan criticized Bhishmadev, alleging that he was reluctant to kill Arjuna because of paternal affection. The Kshatriya cannot tolerate insults on the principle of fighting. Bhishmadev therefore promised that the next day he would kill all five Pandavas with special weapons made for the purpose. Duryodhan was satisfied, and he kept the arrows with him to be delivered the next day during the fight. By tricks, Arjuna took the arrows from Duryodhan, and Bhishmadev could understand that this was a trick of Lord Krishna. So he took a vow that the next day Krishna would have to take up weapons himself, otherwise his friend Arjuna would die. In the next day's fighting, Bhishmadev fought so violently that both Arjuna and Krishna were in trouble. Arjuna was almost defeated. The situation was so tense that he was about to be killed by Bhishmadev the very next moment. At that time, Lord Krishna wanted to please his devotee Bhishma by keeping Bhishma's promise, which was more important than his own. Seemingly, he broke his own promise. He promised before the beginning of the Battle of Kurukshetra that he would remain without weapons and would not use his strength for either of the parties. But to protect Arjuna, he got down from the chariot, took up the wheel of the chariot, and hurriedly rushed at Bhishmadev in an angry mood, as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He dropped his covering cloth on the way, and out of anger, he did not know what he had dropped. He had dropped it. Bhishmadev at once gave up his weapons and stood to be killed by Krishna, his beloved Lord. The fighting of the day was thus ended at that very moment, and Arjuna was saved. Of course, there was no possibility of Arjuna's death because the Lord himself was on the chariot. But because Bhishmadev wanted to see Lord Krishna take up some weapon to save his friend, the Lord created this situation, making Arjuna's death imminent. He stood before Bhishmadev to show him that his promise was fulfilled and that he had taken up the wheel. So there's quite a situation going on here, and it is very intense because Arjuna could get killed at this moment. And now we find that the Supreme Lord actually breaks his promise. So most people of the atheistic nature, or even some religionists, I think, would have a hard time accepting that God broke his promise. This is kind of unheard of, that that God would do something like this. Because most people have a conception that God is all good, he's all equal, he does no wrong, he's all merciful, and he gets, I guess, the devil to do all his bad work. He punishes everybody and everything else. But for God, he, this picture is that he is so pure. And for him to actually go against his word, it might shake someone's faith, or it might even cause someone to have great doubt that, you know, Krishna actually, that God is, Krishna are the same because of this duplicity that he's showing here. But actually, we make a conception of God. We make this conception that he's all pure. And who are we to say what God looks like, or what he does, or what his morals are? God can do whatever he wants. But it's our disease, to the point that we actually map out what God does, and that he's not allowed to break the rules, right? God can't do that. He can't go beyond that morality. But that's our disease, that we, at this point of being in the material world, we're trying to control everything, and we're even trying to control God. So it's a for sure ticket with that ignorance that we're going to remain here in this material world for a very long time. That was the disease that got us here, and that's what will keep us here. If we keep that idea of thinking that we can figure out how God should be and that we can judge him. So this is not really the reason that we have faith in Krishna, that our faith is not disturbed by this. Because we have the Bhagavatam here. This Bhagavatam is called the mature fruit. And it's for mature devotees because it gives the highest understanding of who God really is and how great he is. And the surrendered soul, the one that has given up this false ego of trying to know everything and trying to control God and speculate like anything on God, one who's given that up can surrender to the Bhagavatam and accept that this is a very mature understanding of God, unlike any other scripture you'll ever find. Never will you find such descriptions of the Lord's personality and his relationships with all his devotees and that intense love that he's displaying here in this particular pastime. He's displaying his love for Arjuna because he doesn't want him to die as his great friend. And he's also showing that he loves his devotee Bhishma so much that he has this desire. Bhishma has a very strange relationship with Krishna in some ways. But he just wants to see Krishna get so angry and so, because he's so attached to Arjuna that he breaks his own promise. And so, this whole situation is actually orchestrated by Krishna. It's a very complicated scene here, because there's a lot of vows involved in this whole situation. I don't know if you've all discussed before, but I was trying to remember my mind of the series of videos all about the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which are very nice because it really displays it. But there's the vow of Bhishma himself, you know, terrible. Bhishma means terrible, the terrible vow that he took that he would never marry to satisfy his father's desires. And then that whole situation with Amba and Ambalika, is it Amba or Ambalika? Made that vow. Amba? I think it's Amba. Yeah, and she was so angry that Bhishma would not marry her after she destroyed her relationship with someone who she really was attached to, that, she said, I'm gonna come back again and I'm gonna make sure that this Bhishma is killed. And, whatever I have to do. And so she did great austerities and she was able to get the, like a eunuch type body and we find very soon that, this personality was very instrumental in actually the complete, you know, demise of Bhishma Dev. So that's one vow, and then there's Bhishma's vow here of so many different things, and his desire to see Krishna in this way. And so Krishna's having to figure all this out, how to, you know, satisfy his devotees and make sure all the vows are kept. And at that cost, because of his desire to fulfill all the devotees' desires, he breaks his own vow. And this is, you know, quite amazing. But when you think of it, it's described in the Bhagavatam that the greatest display of love here in the material world is the display of a mother for the child. I guess none of you never have kids yet. But, it's an intense feeling for your children. There are many stories of mothers that have actually like stopped cars, lifted cars, done amazing things to save their child. Anything. I just read something somewhere where some guy jumped in and was threatening her child in the back and figured the only way I can do this is just to crash into a thing and hope the kid didn't get killed. And so this is the intense, love that one can experience here in the material world. What less in this, on a spiritual platform. And so Krishna, he has that love for his devotees. In the 12th chapter described of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's, you know, saying how dear his devotee is to him. And this is a display here of how dear Bhishma is, and Arjuna, and all the Pandavas, that he is willing to break his vow. And you would expect that of someone like of a mother to actually have that intense love. And it's reciprocal. Krishna says that he will love you as much as you want to love him. So how much are you willing to do for Krishna? How much love do you have for Krishna right now? I mean, we're all trying anyway, right? And so he sees that endeavor. But how much more we could intensify it if we wanted to? Today, do you think you could intensify your love for Krishna a little bit? We probably all could a little bit today if we thought about it, if we really tried. And then Krishna will see. I mean, he's very conscious of our love. This is the whole program. And so therefore he will say, oh, look, he's trying more, so I will give more. It's a reciprocation that is going on. We should be conscious of that every day to somehow or other increase that. And so with the Vedic culture, taking a promise or a vow was considered very heavy weighted. Now if someone says, oh, I promise I'll do this, or I promise I won't say this to somebody, you kind of like go, oh, sure, yeah, uh-huh. You don't really expect it to happen. You know? There's no weight to it. Said that Dharma's on its last leg, but that one's pretty much gone too, truthfulness. No one really considers a vow as very important. No one even makes vows anymore. But in the Vedic culture, it was very, very serious thing. Maybe you can think of a few vows that were, besides Bhishan, that was very heavy. What's one? Yeah, but Krishna, he did something for that. The next one? Mm-hmm. Indra, yeah. And Gandhari, she vowed that she would blind herself, you know, follow. That was one. Oh, come on, think of some others. There's so many, yeah. Right. What Krishna do? Made it so the sun wouldn't set, right? Pretty heavy. And that vow, another vow of Arjuna's got Krishna in an uptight situation too. Arjuna's really causing a lot of trouble for Krishna. He vowed to bring back the sons of the Brahmins, right? And then he couldn't do it, even though he's a big old hefty guy. He couldn't do it, and so Krishna had to take him on a wild trip to find what was going on, what's going on. And so that's a whole other vow. Come on, there's some others.
Arjuna was probably busy somewhere else. So he got so agitated when Arjuna came back at the evening. He said, your Gandiva is useless, you should throw it out of anger. And Arjuna, like, he remembered his vow, I have to kill him. So he was about to kill Yudhishthira, and then Krishna said, hold on, what are you doing? He said, I have made a vow, I have to kill him. Then I don't know the details, but then Arjuna, Krishna said, oh, you can actually insult him, and insult for a Kshatriya is like death. So he called him everything, and then he got down at the feet of Yudhishthira after that. I'm sorry, he felt so bad that I have said like so many bad things to you. So then Krishna explained to him that initially you wanted to kill him because to fulfill your vow, and you were not trying to listen to me. And now, see, you have said so many bad things. Now you feel even like that is small compared to killing. So now you feel so bad about it. So you see, like, what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
When, this is a story that Prabhupada said before, when Srila Bhakti Sandhasarish Thakur was a young boy, he had eaten the mangoes that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had brought to be offered to Krishna. And then when he found out that those mangoes were actually supposed to be offered to Krishna, he felt very bad about it, and then he vowed that he'll never take mangoes ever again for the rest of his life. He kept that vow until the end.
Bhima made a heavy vow to drink the blood of Dushasana. That was a heavy one. And actually Krishna was very disappointed because someone kept his vow, his promise, and he was a little upset about it, and that was Yudhisthira. Right. When he wanted Drona to be killed, and he said, you know, just say that, you know, Ashwatthama's dead. And he goes, but Ashwatthama's not dead. I can't do that. And so then he came forward. What? Right. And so finally, who said it, though? It was Bhima, right. He said, Ashwatthama is dead. So sometimes, you know, you might have to break a vow. Actually, Haridas Thakur, he was very upset. He had a vow to chant a certain amount of rounds a day. And at the very end, I don't know if you've ever been really, really sick, but it's really hard to chant your rounds. And it was just like such a struggle. Everything is like burning in your body. But even at the time of death, you can imagine how hard it was chanting your rounds. But he was saying, oh, I just have to do this. Lord Chaitanya said, don't worry about it. Don't, you know, lighten up. You know, you don't have to chant 300,000 names. You know, you've done so much. You're the acharya of the holy name. So all these different activities are going on between the devotees and Krishna and everything. It is pretty amazing. But the main goal of all our vows should really be is love of Krishna. This is what really should be the reason why we take any vows, is that ultimately we will please Krishna. And so all these different relationships are just churning. It churns bhakti, and it churns out this love within us. So, especially our vows to the spiritual master, the spiritual master helps us. It's not that we can do it directly, but the spiritual master, by us keeping our vows to our spiritual master, will bring us, by his mercy, closer to Krishna, so that love can really unfold. So it's very important that we do keep our vows. But there are some times when, sometimes the rules have to be broken, just like you were talking about Bhaktisananda Saraswati Thakur. He took that vow to chant a billion names of Krishna, something like that, and he did it. But then it came to the point for his preaching. He wore regular sewn clothes, he went against the rules of the sannyas, he got in cars, he did all kinds of different things for the real goal of preaching to Krishna, which would please his spiritual master. And then we can look at Srila Prabhupada. He broke some rules, right? It wasn't, you know, we weren't supposed to take women for disciples. Just think, we've all been left out. What a drag, right? Yeah. So he broke that. He broke that vow. He crossed the ocean. I think that's another vow. Another sannyas type thing you're not supposed to do. But he did it. It was a higher principle, that the goal is to please my spiritual master, to please Krishna. And even disciples of Srila Prabhupada, you can look at some of their jail records. We broke a lot of rules to please Srila Prabhupada. And sometimes it had to be checked. We got a little out of hand. But many times we had to, yes, we want to spread this mission to Prabhupada. We'll do anything, you know. And sometimes you got caught, sometimes you didn't. But, even Prabhupada said, hook or crook, you know, get the books out there. Of course, he had to refine that a little later when it got a little out of hand. But the idea is that we are trying to please Krishna. And Krishna will be so happy with this that he'll want to please us. And he'll give us that little taste that will make us want to continue on in our devotional service. And so, here, Krishna is trying his best to orchestrate the whole thing so that everyone's happy and satisfied. It's a big job, and I don't think you can ever think any differently than Krishna, that our Krishna is so wonderful that he can do all these things just like in one stroke. He can do everything. And that he is not limited to just do what we say he has to do as God. But he has such a bigger character and personality that we are actually shared with. This Bhagavatam shares this understanding of Krishna, which goes beyond any other standing of God in the entire planet. So we should be very, very thankful that we have these books and these pastimes of Krishna that go deep into who the Supreme Lord is. He's not just a stereotyped figure, as many people think. Some, you know, guy that just goes up there and gives judgment all day. No, he's not a boring person at all. He's, dynamic. And we see that in bhakti, which is non-different than Krishna, it's a dynamic thing. How many different things we get to do in a day, right? Our spiritual senses are like enlivened, so much so that we're beginning to realize that I'm not this body. I don't have these limitations. I can actually do anything for Krishna. Right? So this is the realizations we can have by just keeping in contact, hearing these pastimes, doing service for Krishna. And that someday we'll actually begin to really see Krishna face to face. So these are some of the things that I can remember that I was going to say. But maybe you have some questions. Maybe you have some doubts. Maybe Krishna shouldn't have broken his promise. Maybe he shouldn't steal butter. Maybe he shouldn't go out and dance with the gopis at unmarried women at night. Maybe some people do have a hard time with that. I know even in the Hindu religion, some of them kind of like want to, erase that part or something like that. But our Krishna is all good. Does anyone have any doubts? Oh, yes. Okay.
You spoke about Krishna's love for his devotees, and you gave the analogy of the mother's love for the child. Mother Nanda was here a couple days ago, and she actually spoke about this, how certainly for myself, when I hear these points about Krishna's love for his devotees, I think, like, yeah, that's good for these great devotees like Arjuna or Bhishma Dev, that I can see how Krishna's love for these devotees is like a mother for the child. But sometimes for myself, I feel like I wonder if that's actually true in my case, because obviously my love for Krishna hasn't fully manifested. And you also said how Krishna's love is reciprocal. So since I have very little, if any, love for Krishna, how do we kind of reconcile those two?
Well, Srila Prabhupada said we should intensely chant. He said, like a mother for the child. And we're not like the child for the mother. And so that's what we have to practice. Because we're in the shower, we shouldn't think that we're not getting clean. We are getting clean. We are getting closer and closer to loving Krishna. It's not like you say, I mean, I don't think I love Krishna yet. But because we are in the process, Krishna isn't condemning us, that's for sure. He's actually so pleased. And if we can intensify it, that's to our advantage, right? And then Krishna will respond. So Prabhupada always encourages, chant with all your heart, like a child for the mother. And if you go in some place and a child is lost, you'll see how intense they yell and scream, Can't do anything until you finally put it back in the lap of the mother. So we have to practice. And that every day we have a chance to practice, and every day we have a chance to get that much closer. We shouldn't skip a day. And if we go at that rate, then in this lifetime, we might, attract Krishna so much so that He will reveal himself entirely to us. But I think every day you must have realizations, have some revelation. Every day we can look at nature and we are more conscious of Krishna. Something bad happens to us and we think, oh, it could have been a lot worse, right? Or we see something mercy, you know, something happens and we go, oh, Krishna, you're so kind. So kind. Actually, whenever I'm chanting and I'm getting spaced out, I just say, I have so much to be thankful for. And then I think of Krishna. Because I do have so much to be thankful for. Unlimited things. I could be in such a other situation, you know. So, I think every day we are becoming more Krishna conscious. You know, it's just that we don't see it, but I'm sure Krishna does see it. He's right in your heart. He isn't going to miss anything. That's for sure. So we just don't want to miss any steps. But have the faith that Krishna does love us. He loves us a lot more than we love him. That's the fact. But he's given us everything. He's given us, you know, constant association with him if we take advantage of him. Nothing else? Yes?
I spoke with a man, an Indian-bodied man, who was talking about Krishna the way you were just describing. I was at the New Orleans Indian store in Metairie, and someone introduced me to the owner of the store, and he was from India, and he said he knew I was a devotee of Krishna, and he started laughing and mocking Krishna and me, saying, how can you think he's God? He steals, and he runs around with other men's wives, and he was going on and on, and I just got mad and left. So I don't know.
That's good. You should leave.
I don't know if there's anything I could have said to argue.
He's jealous of Krishna, that's all. You know, he's thinking I should be in that situation. And then he's got his limitations on Krishna, on God. He doesn't have faith, obviously. And unfortunately, he'll probably never find God. You can't really preach to those kind of people. You just pray that they're not too offensive. The best thing is to leave so he doesn't make more offenses. That's why I never mention anything about Krishna to my parents, because they'll just make offenses. So, best that we just, you know, give him some prasada. That's the best thing. But yeah, people, some, especially Hindus, I think they have that problem. They rather worship some other demigod or something like that. And I don't know why it develops that way, but I think it's just our envy, our really deep, really rooted envy. We all still envy Krishna in some way.
If you're ever in a situation where you can't walk away, there are a couple of things you can do, a couple of very simple strategies. First is you ask them an open-ended question. So what is your philosophy? Turn it around. And then after they pontificate their philosophy, then you say, so then what is the basis for your philosophy? See if you can get them to acknowledge that they're just making it up. Then if you present something authoritative, then especially if it's a Hindu, you can say, well, what do you think of the Bhagavad Gita? Do you believe the Bhagavad Gita? And then generally they'll say yes. So then you can quote something from the Bhagavad Gita. You have them checkmate. These are for argumentative types. Like
because of lack of understanding, but if and you may not be able to judge if they're serious or not, but maybe if you try that and give them explain to them after this, so maybe they might open their ears to what you're saying. They might say, well, Hindus generally don't listen from Indian devotees.
Best thing is to actually just show our devotion and our faith to Krishna, that we take Krishna as he is, everything about him. You know? He's blue? No problem. I mean, how many of you had a hard time accepting that God was blue? You did. But most of us I just took them all, you know, because like he was saying, the Bhagavad Gita, if you could refer to the Bhagavad Gita, the instructions of Krishna and the philosophy is just so perfect that if he's blue, well, you throw that in, it's okay. But I mean, everything else, everything makes so much sense. Yeah, you can't argue it, really. And if he wears a dhoti rather than the pants, hey, I don't care what he wears, you know. So it's because it's such a solid foundation, the philosophy. There's no, really, you know, the sentiment part. Yeah, it's a lot of religionists are very sentimental, and they picture God with the flowing robes and the long hair and all the wrinkles and stuff. But, you know, that sentiment, there's no room for sentiment here. It's the absolute truth. And if the absolute truth wants to be blue or yellow or all these different colors, which it is at different times, why not? It's much more exciting. I mean, people read these, what's the name of those books that are so famous? Yeah, that stuff. Harry Potter stuff. I mean, the more far out, the more they love it. So for me, the more far out God is, the better. I mean, you know, when you hear his Varaha and all that kind of stuff, just think of that relationship that Varaha did with the demigods. You know, he was just like fighting, and then he drops this club. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna, you know, everyone goes, Krishna's gonna lose, and they all freak out, right? And so Krishna was just excited. He just like Bhishma's here excited, you know, that Krishna's angry. So in the same way, you know, Krishna's seeing all the demigods freak out. So that's his pleasure. And just think of Rukmini. You know, Krishna said all this stuff about how horrible I am and everything in front of his wife, Rukmini, and she's like saying it, you know? Because Krishna wanted to see that intense love, wanted to churn that love. So there's many times like that when Krishna performs different acts. So our God is far out. I mean, he can do whatever he wants, but it's all for the good, because everything he does is to attract us back to Krishna, the most attractive. So when he does all these different things, it just makes him more attractive as far as I'm concerned. I mean, a god, a boring god that doesn't do much all day and doesn't have a personal relationship with everybody in a different way, how boring, you know? You know, love is very individual. It is very, you know, it's not a mold. It's everything is very unique. And that's what makes, you know, variety is the mother of enjoyment. So the highest enjoyment is going to be from the highest person who has a unique relationship with every single person. As you can see here, look at all the different relationships he has with everybody on the battlefield, with Kukshetra. You know, I mean, there's so much intrigue and everything going on. The whole Mahabharata is just like, you know, your head swims, you know. But it's all because Krishna wants to please his devotees and to attract us back to him. He's tired of us being here. He would like us back home. The trouble is we're not tired of being here. But we need to hear more of how wonderful our God is, so that we really want to finish up our business and get out of here. And tell Maya to take a hike. Yes.
One of the vows by Bhima that we are talking about, our vows. So, I feel like for many of us, different austerities are differently intense based on our own capacities. For some of us, it might be very easy to sit through a Bhagavatam class, for others, it's honestly. Similarly, I remember for Bhima, it was almost impossible to abstain from grains and beans for the entire 24 hours of the day in Ekadashi, and eventually he decided to eat. It was like on Pandava Ekadashi, he kept the entire vow and did not even drink water, and thus got all the fight for Ekadashi throughout the entire year. And I think, like, for a voracious eater like him, so much, and also perform hard to get tasks that were involved.
Yes, we had a hard time with that one. We all have our difficulties with our different, you know, things, but every once in a while we should redo our vows. It's very nice to strengthen our love for Krishna. But we have to be careful that, you know, especially when you're speaking of austerity, you know, like doing your jal kadasi, it's tough. I mean, I do it every year, but it's, you know, it's not easy. But the goal should be not to harden our hearts, but to soften our hearts. So that's a tendency of some devotees, is that they take these heavy duty vows and they can't really keep them, and then their heart gets tough, and you know, they're like biting the bullet, you know. But better that we accept what's favorable for our devotional service and keep our hearts very soft and pliable, so that Krishna can be comfortable there. And yes?
It's just on what he said and what you said. I was always quoting something about a woman shouldn't perform too many austerities because it will harden her heart. And then someone said, where did that come from? And I was thinking, well, I just knew Prabhupada said it. Someone told me that over the years. But I don't remember actually where I heard it, so maybe I just changed it and made it up. But then you mentioned it. So you mentioned hardening your heart with too many austerities. And then also along the lines of what he was saying, I think that's a good reminder, because I hear devotees sometimes criticizing other devotees for not doing as much as they are, or as well as, or not serving as well or fast as they are. And I think that people don't understand that sometimes someone's doing the best they can, and you can just assume that they're being lazy, but they just have a different body or different skills or different abilities. And I think it's really offensive to criticize. You know?
Yeah, that mentality can do great damage to your devotional creeper, finding fault with others. And thinking all devotees are equal. All devotees aren't equal. Everyone is at their own pace going towards Krishna, and who are we to judge anybody else? We should, you know, as Prabhupada said, point the finger this way, not that way. But the tendency is, because we always think that we're greater than someone else, we, you know, criticize them, especially when it comes to things like vows. Why isn't everybody fasting? Why doesn't everyone, you know, do this? You know, I'm so great, you know. We have to catch ourselves.
So, where you're quoting that from, that's from Rupa Goswami, right? In the Nectar of Devotion, where he says that?
I didn't
Well, not quote, but like what she was mentioning, that comes from, does Rupa Goswami say that, or where does
about
that come
women?
From? About hardening the heart. But that's in everyone, not just women, right?
Yes, yeah, that's everybody.
So is that where that comes from?
It's mentioned many times about that we shouldn't do too many artificial austerities, because they can harden our heart. So we have to avoid that. Sometimes it's hard, because you know, you sometimes take vows and then you realize that I'm not good for this. I can't really fulfill it, and you have to be very careful. Best to talk to other god brothers and god sisters and consider it before you do something like that. And Prabhupada made it very simple for us. We don't have to complicate it. We have enough austerities. Actually, one time, Jayananda Prabhu came to the Portland Temple. Maybe you were there then. They used to come by with their, traveling bus, they asked Jayananda to class, and I actually recorded it, and I loaned it to someone that got lost, because I don't think there's a recording of them giving class ever. I just remember the class. It was a real complicated class about Lord Brahma and creation, and, you know, the whole thing, where it gets really complicated, everything, shedding this and doing that and joining it. And Jayananda just kind of shook his head and said, and it was about Brahma's doing austerities. And so Jayananda just said, I don't know much about this stuff, he said. He goes, all I know is that we have a lot of austerities. He goes, when I go in the shower and I see the hot water and then I see the cold water, he says, that's enough for me. He said, because you're always advised to take cold showers in the morning. So he was very simple. He just accepted, you know, the simple austerities that Prabhupada gave us, that knew would help us to invigorate our soul towards Krishna. And didn't make it real complicated. Like you said, the Chaturmasya, we call it. We made so many complications, Chaturmasya. So we made a mess of the whole Chaturmasya. So we have to be careful not to mess up what Prabhupada's given. He's given us a simple process. We can, and he said it over again, chant 16 rounds at 10 in the morning and evening program. So we need to perfect that. I see in our movement, and there is a move towards that direction of perfecting our chanting and perfecting our sadhana. And that is where our advancement will come, not creating.
About breaking vows of like following the law for the sake of Krishna service. So our friend Ferrari group is a physician in Miami. He's on the traveling Sankirtan party for some years, and then he went back to college, got his medical degree, very well in medicine. So after some years he was invited to be the chief of medicine in a big hospital in Miami. He accepted the position, and then before he was described, they called him in and said, everything checks out really well, but you have 17 arrests on your record in Kentucky and Indiana. What was that all about? So he managed to get through. And I was also remembering, for those who don't know, Mother Akuti and her husband Peter Bondi were my department for Dr. Akuti, who introduced me to Krishna consciousness in 1972. Her Malpuras at I had Malpuras at the Sunday feast, and I went to her husband and said, can I move it? That's really what happened.
He couldn't move. That was the idea. You're stuffed and so full. They just
So do you remember the flower runs we used to do?
Oh, yeah.
So at the flower run, it was at 3:45 in the morning. The flower shopper would go and shop at the neighborhood yards.
Portland was known as the city of roses, so there was a lot of roses, prize roses. Actually, one woman went out and she came back and someone had pulled a knife on her. And that's when we stopped going out with knives. But she chanted Lord Nrisingadev, and Lord Nrisingadev saved her. But we did some crazy things. Mother Bhakti has a wonderful story about dumpster diving with flowers. Did she ever tell you that story? Yeah, she knew that this guy was, in the back of flower shop, they'd throw a bunch of really good flowers in Houston. We used to get things. So she was told that the man was not nice, that owned the place, that there were really good flowers in there. So she got into the dumpster and was getting the flowers, and all of a sudden she hears beep, 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 beep. In other words, the machine was coming back to get the dumpster, to empty it, and she goes, and she saw the man drive up. It was not nice. So she goes, "Am I going to die here? Am I going to die here? Am I going to get out and get chastised for the man?" Anyway, the way she tells us is, I can't picture Mother Bhakti in the dumpster. But anyway, that was our story. Somehow or other, she got that. Oh, no, what happened was it went to the dumpster next door. That's what it was. She was like, psh, and then, So these were the risks that we would take to show our love for Srila Prabhupada. So I would do it all again a million times. Because I'm so grateful that Srila Prabhupada has introduced us to this most amazing, wonderful Krishna, who is showing his love for us. Okay? Hare Krishna.